The following podcast is sponsored by SuperheroStuff.com.
Sci-Fi for Me Radio, this is H2O. Jason Hunt here along with Timothy Harvey.
Hello.
And the phone number, if you want to leave us a comment and send us feedback, is 573-42-SCI-FI. Or you can send an email to h2o@scififorme.com. The topic for this week is kind of a combination of a couple of things that sprung out of a conversation we weren't recording a little bit earlier.
Which happens a lot.
It happens,
why
yes.
Why are we recording this?
But let's start here. Hit this button. Variety. Mm-hmm. There's an article today. Brian Lowry, the author. Netflix, Ted Sarandos. There's no such thing as too much TV. Now, if you have been a regular listener, then you know that we have talked about the fact, last week I guess it was, that there is so much selection, so many choices out there right now, that it's kind of hard to find the good stuff. It's all out there just mixed up and mashed up, and you have to look for the quality in the content that's available. Well, according to Sarandos, he's actually making a comment in response to something that was said this summer from FX Network CEO John Landgraf.
Right.
And he was at the Hollywood Radio and Television Society's annual State of the Industry luncheon. Sarandos, Netflix chief content officer, noted that Landgraf, who cited a perceived glut of original scripted series that will exceed 400 the next year, Sarandos suggested that the only concern would be if distributors were spending vastly more and people weren't watching more content. Landgraf made his remarks on the same stage at Beverly Hilton Hotel during the TV Critics Association tour. He was expressing concerns the supply was already exceeding demand, and he was saying that original productions were on the last edge of the bubble, and the bubble was about to burst. Of course, Sarandos is one of those that, you know, Netflix is just getting into scripted programming,
right?
You know, House of Cards being one of the first ones, but they're really doubling down on this kind of thing. And of course, it makes sense that he would sit there and go, "No, scripted television's not over."
Well, and hopefully he's right in the sense that we saw the alternative to scripted television, and it was 20 plus years of reality TV. And that's a bubble I wish would burst. I think that the fact that we have some strong, really strong scripted TV right now is always a good thing. But like I said last week, I think that there's a very good argument to be made that we have too many choices.
Yeah. Well, now ABC's Paul Lee, he was also at this thing. He said, "We're all in an on-demand world where if you don't love it, it doesn't survive." Which kind of goes along with what we were talking about before. Mm-hmm. If you don't like it fast enough, soon enough, it goes away before you can find it.
Right.
The model is changing, and I'm not sure that anybody really has a full grasp on what it's changing into.
No, they don't. We've talked about this before, in that we've never been able to figure. No one's ever figured out how to make web content profitable.
Right.
And the some very, very smart people have been trying to figure this out.
I'd like to figure it out.
For as long as there has been web content, and nobody has figured it out. You know, you've got paywalls, and you've got, you know, downloads and all these things that you can potentially make money from. But something that actually meets the whole need of a sustainable business model just really hasn't happened. You know, you can put all the ads up you want, but we have all gotten really, really good at ignoring ads.
Yeah, it's easy to do. I mean, you either you DVR through it, And so you can fast forward and skip, mm-hmm. or in my case, you fast forward the tape.
I actually do love the fact that you will actually record stuff to tape.
Well, that's all I got. I don't have a DVR.
Well, I don't have a DVR either.
Yeah. So,
but I get all my content online. So, which is something that, you know, it's what people are doing.
Well, see, and in my case, the only thing that I tape right now has been steampunked, because Game Show Network is not. Game Show Network is not modern enough that they're putting their episodes online yet for their original programming.
Mm-hmm.
And there's not screeners anywhere. You don't hear any press screeners or anything. So it pretty much the only way that I can see it if I don't see it live is to tape it.
Right.
Because, you know, then you got to review it and you got to do the recap and the write-ups and stuff. So fortunately, that show is over. So I don't have to... I don't have to tape anything anymore, at least for now.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's what that is. But it kind of dovetails off of the other thing that we were talking about, the fact that this season has not been strong for opening episodes. And you were saying, you know, the first episodes out of the gate for a lot of these shows have been okay.
Yeah, they're not bad. It's just we were talking about the fact that the first episode of The Flash, which really was kind of the breakout genre show last year.
Yeah,
I think it. A lot of people would agree that it was.
It was really solid.
Yeah, and especially considering that you looked at the first year of Arrow.
Yeah.
And the second year of Arrow. In fact, every year of Arrow, there's been some dodgy moments. But, I mean, Arrow overall has gotten better. But you look at The Flash last year, and it was really... I mean, people were impressed.
Yeah.
And
I think people will be very impressed with Supergirl.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes out,
right? But that's kind of different because we've seen that pilot. I mean, that pilot's been out for a while, and that was,
right.
And I think
it's still a first episode,
sure,
of a first show.
But they really, I think they really looked at that as we've got to sell people on the idea of Supergirl,
yeah.
Because in some respects, the target audience, like so many of these things, is actually people our age, mm-hmm. people in their 30s and 40s. And 50s. And
people who remember Chris Reeve.
And who remember the Helen Slater Supergirl.
Yeah.
And who sit there and go, oh, yeah. It's a shame. She made a really good Supergirl. It's too bad she was in a really awful movie.
Yeah.
And, of course, no one sets out to make a bad movie. Well, except for The Asylum.
I was about to say.
And Troma Studios.
Yeah.
And we loved, you know, look, there's the Asylum is entertaining garbage, and Troma is...
They're deliberately
playing. But, you know, the people who made Supergirl did not sit there and go, let's see if we can make a film that is going to make us basically mean that nobody's going to want to make a Supergirl movie for 30 years.
Yeah.
You know, nobody set out to do that. But it's what happens,
yeah.
You know, and we've seen that at various points in superhero television and superhero movies. I mean, I have fond memories of the Spider-Man TV series.
Oh yeah, with Nicholas Hammond.
Yeah, it's awful. It's really bad.
But you don't remember it being bad.
No, but you look at it now and you go,
well, sure. Compared to what we've got now, yeah, it's bad. But
yeah, so
for what it was at the time.
Well, but then again, you also had the Incredible Hulk in that same time period.
Yeah, but the Incredible Hulk didn't involve a lot of climbing the walls and
right,
the visual effects, I guess you could say.
Well,
I mean, you just changed out the actor and boom, there you go.
Well, not only that, but the Incredible Hulk was the fugitive.
Yeah.
It was the fugitive in fugitive in green.
That's what it was.
And the best theme music for walking down a highway alone ever.
Uh-huh. Da, 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 da. Yep. Well, and it's
don't got, make me angry, Mr. McGee.
You wouldn't like me when I'm angry.
Great lines. Yeah.
Well, and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. didn't start off all that great either. There'd been several, but this particular season, though, with a lot of the shows that have been coming back, you even said that Walking Dead was kind of just there.
Yeah, I think when about the same time this will be going up. The Walking Dead video review that Dustin and I did will be going up as well. We didn't so much touch on this in the course of the review, but I've been thinking about it, especially since we started talking about the returns of these series, that there was nothing wrong with the episode. Just if there was nothing really wrong with the first episode of The Flash or the first episode of Arrow.
Gotham was pretty good.
It
was... yeah, I know, but I mean, it was a solid entry into the show.
Yeah, see, Gotham needs a solid entry into the show. Gotham's in trouble.
Yeah.
I think that's just a general consensus. I mean, I gave up on it last season. I just couldn't take it anymore.
Well, and I've said before, Supergirl's going to kill it.
Yeah, I think you're
unless
right.
Unless they move it.
I think that Supergirl is going to be the one that really stands out, I think, because it does have a strong pilot. And I think that when that hits the air, people are going to sit there and go, oh, this looks like fun.
Yeah.
And Flash is a show that had a lot of fun to it, and it still does, I think. But the second episode of Flash was much, much stronger than the first one.
You mean for second season?
Yeah.
Yeah. It really did feel like, because we talked about this on Rogues Gallery, it felt like Arrow and The Flash were just setting the table for this season.
Oh, yeah. And that, to me, is not the way you start off a season.
No.
And I'm not saying that you can't do that. I mean, you know, but it's...
Well, and James pointed out that Flash missed an opportunity because at the end of the first episode, Jay Garrick walks in.
Mm-hmm.
He says, my name is Jay Garrick, and your world is in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
And James is like, well, he should have said, my name is Jay Garrick, I'm the Flash.
Right, yeah, exactly.
And that's your ending. And, that's your cliffhanger, whoosh, scene that you don't get, and we didn't get.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, it does feel like... I don't know. Maybe they're all being safe. Are they playing it safe, you think?
You know what?
we don't want to do too much too soon and blow all of our budget and energy and enthusiasm.
I don't think you can do that. Okay, again, because you come back to the fact that there's so many different choices out there. And yes, there are not that many superhero TV shows on the air right now.
Yet.
Okay, yet. Yeah, that is about to change.
Oh, yeah. Way.
But and the CW is a safer place for a lot of these things than other networks, because the CW doesn't have as much to lose in some respects.
At the same time, they don't have as big of a budget that they can put to each particular show because they're so limited as a network.
Right.
You think with the cancellation of Beauty and the Beast that might put Amazon back on the table?
Ooh. Possibly. Yeah. Maybe.
Maybe.
Be interesting. I hadn't thought about that.
But, I mean, it'd be kind of a challenge if they're doing Wonder Woman on the movies. They may not. Time to call and give them my Zatanna.
Yeah, well.
It's time for Zatanna.
I think that would be a cool show to have.
She'll probably be in Justice League Dark.
If Justice League Dark ever happens.
I was supposed to be going with, what is it, Todd Rudin doing it?
Sure, okay, sure. Well, okay, this is...
I know.
Okay, we have a place for this. Rogues Gallery is really the place to talk about this, but we'll do a little brief digression here. So our DC slate with movies right now, we've got Batman versus Superman, which is, of course, not Superman... Man of Steel 2, but it's Man of Steel 2.
It's Batman. It's a Batman movie with Superman.
And it's Batman. It's going to kick off the Batman series. And Suicide Squad, which is basically the Dirty Dozen with supervillains. Okay. Which is, you know, and oddly enough, that's the one I'm kind of...
But it's Batman's Dirty Dozen.
Right. Well, yeah. And it also looks like it could be, although it looks like they're really playing up the dark, which is of all the things to go dark with, Suicide Squad actually is the one.
Yeah.
But it looks kind of like it might actually be fun in a really weird way. You know, just like, you know, so I mean, I don't know.
Well, and they got that workspace comedy that's coming.
Right.
You know, the insurance, they all work at an insurance company that deals with the fallout from dealing with superheroes and stuff. I don't know. I don't know if we got a title for that yet.
No.
But then.
Over on the Marvel side.
Marvel side, we got Damage Control coming.
Right. And Damage Control actually has a, for comic book fans, it has a history. But again, yeah. So much of this stuff is really going out to audiences that are not necessarily comic book fans.
Right.
But what's intriguing to me about the stuff that they talk about when you talk about things like Justice League Dark, okay, Justice League, people get, okay, there you go. It's even if your entry level to Justice League is the Super Friends,
right?
Okay. Meanwhile,
at the Hall of Justice.
The first season of that.
Yeah. We have a building here in Kansas City.
Mm-hmm.
And I've posted a picture of it before because we were talking about doing a fan film at one point.
Mm-hmm.
The entrance to Hallmark's corporate building, I kid you not, looks almost identical in the shape.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the shape is there. You could. You know, do a little bit of CG maybe to mask in, you know, a matte painting and stuff. But there's the Hall of Justice.
Yeah.
I mean, it's got the fountain out front and, you know, the archway. And so, I'm like, that's the Hall of Justice. right there. I like what Young Justice did with the Hall of Justice being, you know, tying in both the Hall of Justice and the Watchtower.
Oh, yeah.
All together being like the...
Young Justice was too cool to be canceled.
It was. And, it was, really.
You know, they should be ashamed of themselves.
Yes.
And animation was really good.
Oh, yeah. Well, and just to let people know, in case you aren't aware yet, because we don't have as many people listening to that show, we do talk about the DC filmed media stuff.
Yeah.
Over on Rogues Gallery, which you can also find over at our website under the Sci-Fi for Me Radio tab, or do a search through iTunes, and you can find that there. But yeah, not just the superhero shows coming back, but you look at stuff like Minority Report. The first episode of Minority Report was okay. It wasn't a blockbuster hit right off the bat, and we've seen now with the ratings going down, and the order being cut, that one's going to go away.
Yeah, it seemed particularly moved.
The Player was okay. I wouldn't necessarily consider The Player genre so much. It's more. It's kind of in the way of Person of Interest.
Mm-hmm.
Where you have the computer algorithms that can predict behavior and whatnot, and then you set it in Las Vegas, and you've got basically Person of Interest with gambling.
Yeah, and
it was okay.
And I would argue that Person of Interest really is a genre show,
right?
Because it is very much it's Skynet.
Mm-hmm.
And but it's Skynet set in a world that is ours, and that actually makes it kind of terrifying.
No.
And it may be we may be on its last season.
Why do you think I never leave the basement? Well, Extant was canceled. Halle Berry's show over on CBS.
It took a lot of flack for a long time on being just bad.
Yeah.
And I confess, I never watched it.
I didn't either. I never saw it.
And I. I don't
Maya even, did a write up on the first episode, and she said it was okay.
It was never even a question of me going. I've read the reviews and they're bad.
Yeah.
It was more like, I don't know. Just there was something, and I like the cast. The cast actually had a good cast.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Well, I mean,
it never appealed.
You run into that a lot, where you get a show that on paper. Or a movie, a TV show or a movie, mm-hmm. that on paper looks pretty good.
Yeah.
And the execution of it is not.
Yeah, and I think that there are some things that really ought to work. I mean, you think about when you think about the premise and you think about the cast,
mm-hmm.
and you go, why isn't this working? And then there are things that shouldn't work and do. I mean, when Lucifer comes out,
mm-hmm.
there are so many things about that show that just ought to make you go, this is no. And I was so entertained by the pilot.
Right.
And
you're saying that.
As much as I really felt like I shouldn't be. And then I'm watching this going, this is fun.
Well, and Gotham is about to bring Paul Reubens in as the Penguin's father,
mm-hmm.
which is a part that he played in Batman Returns. So they're going all out. I think they're fully embracing the crazy over in Gotham. But what else? What other shows? Well, Grimm's about to come back.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Once Upon a Time is back.
Once Upon a Time is back. And it was kind of, I didn't see it, but Dan is doing the recaps for it. And it seems to be just another one of those, Well, Heroes Reborn is another one. Your first 2 hours were a lot of table setting. And of course, you have to do that when you've got a show that's coming back, because not only do you have to service the people who like the show to begin with,
mm-hmm.
but you have to reintroduce the concepts to all of the new people who've come in and say, what is this show all about? I don't understand. What is it? Powers? Huh? What?
Yeah.
In doing that, you've got to actually serve two purposes there. Not only tell a decent story, which they kind of did cut it in. I mean, you look at what Chris Pryor is writing over there. It's almost like we're watching a different show.
Right.
Because I remember when Heroes first came out, and granted, it was a 22-episode arc, so they had much longer to play with things and to do the long game and to stretch things out and do the arcs and stuff. But it took a while for all of the different plot lines to coalesce in the first season of Heroes. And they were juggling a lot of balls.
Oh yeah.
In that first season. And they were doing it. They did it okay. They did it pretty well. And this particular season of Heroes Reborn, I think I can see their, okay, we've got this story and this story and this story and this story and this story. And at some point, you know they're all going to overlap.
Oh, yeah.
They're all going to come together because that's the format of the show. But it's almost like knowing you have 13 episodes, there's almost like an expectation that it's all going to happen sooner.
Okay, so here's something that we've noticed. And I think this is something that, while I really appreciate the fact that we're getting these shorter seasons for things, and we talked about this before with things like True Detective and Penny Dreadful and
X-Files.
And so you've got these shorter seasons. It's very much the British model, you know, 6 episodes, 9 episodes, you know, short runs. You can get bigger actors to come in and play.
Right.
There's a lot of things that are attractive about it. But what I think we're also running into is something that we have seen, this is hardly the first time we've seen this sort of thing, where they don't really have the story for that many episodes. Remember way back when I was reviewing Torchwood?
Miracle Day. Yeah.
And I was hating it because it was, oddly enough, it had the same problems with time as The Walking Dead. How strange.
Miracle Day is what? It was six 2-hour episodes. Right?
Miracle Day was a 13-episode run.
Was it?
Yeah. Was it 13? Yeah.
It wasn't that long.
No, because Children of Earth was the shorter run. And Children of Earth was the last really solid Torchwood series.
Yeah.
Miracle Day just spun its wheels forever.
Right.
They had half the content for the amount of time that they had.
Yeah, I remember you saying there was a lot of padding.
Oh, so much padding. And so many things where it's like, okay, so do something. For the love of God, do something. It was painful to watch because, you know, the first season of Torchwood, and for those who don't follow the show, it's a spinoff of Doctor Who. One of the first of several spinoffs since then. And the first season was uneven, but they were trying to find a tone because it was supposed to be the, it was supposed to be the adult version of Doctor Who. So there was a lot more sex and violence and things like that, and things you wouldn't talk about necessarily on Doctor Who.
Monsters and more grown up.
Yeah.
Ideas.
And it had a hard time finding its tone, and then the second season was pretty strong, and then they went to Children of Earth was three episodes long, I think.
Yeah.
And really, really, I mean, it met that goal of going into darker places and more disturbing places.
Yeah.
And really, really quality. I mean, it was good science fiction. It was good alien invasion science fiction. Mm-hmm. And it was scary. And then
and the resolution of it was such that you walked away from it with...
Oh, it's kind of a gut punch.
Yeah.
And I think that very solid writing. And then we have something like, and then Miracle Day was a co-production with Starz.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just really, really too many episodes for what they had, story they had to tell. Yep. And then we saw that again with Fear of the Walking Dead. Six episode series.
Yeah, because was the prequel. You guys had talked about the fact that it felt padded.
Oh yeah, I think they had four. I think they had four episodes worth of story.
Yeah, well, that's an observation the chicks made too.
Yeah.
Where it felt like there was more time than story.
Well, and the other thing is that I think that it was a show that if you were to watch it all back to back, and I don't want to do this.
binge watching zombies
mostly because as a reviewer, as someone to comment on such things, there's something to be said for doing that, because some stories are meant to flow better if you watch them in sittings. Okay,
right.
binge watching is a thing for a reason. And it's not just because, you know, you're so desperate to see the next episode. Some things are structured to flow more like chapters.
Right.
So it's kind of like a book.
Right.
But I don't want to do it. I have no interest in it because I think, unfortunately, I think in that particular case, the problems I had with it would be even worse because you would get those.
You would see the arc and you'd see the dents in the arc a little bit more
Because obviously. You don't have the week-long break. To give you a padding of okay, what's going to happen now, this episode?
Yeah.
Instead, it's like, really, we're gonna just have this not happen for 30 minutes, and oh, look, it's a thing. and there were some story structure problems, I think, with that show that I think would be laid bare even more so.
Yeah.
So when we have these other shows that, I mean, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. came back, not bad.
No.
You know, Flash came back, not bad. Arrow came back, not bad. But we actually had, okay, it's a contrast thing, I think, because we have last season.
Right.
Flash was so strong. Arrow was kind of up and down. But overall, there was some good stuff there.
Yeah.
And Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
had a lot of momentum going into it, too.
And so you just kind of feel like, what did you guys do over the summer? Did you stay out by the pool too long? Did you? You didn't do your homework. I don't know.
Speaking of breaks and that sort of thing, we're going to take one. Let you hear from our sponsor, SuperheroStuff.com, who is sending us some stuff.
Yay,
by the way,
stuff.
And we will be back on the backside of this and talk more about TV. When H2O continues on Sci-Fi for Me Radio, don't go anywhere.
You're listening to H2O on Sci-Fi for Me Radio.
Age of Ultron stuff.
SuperheroStuff.com.
Where can you get Justice League stuff?
SuperheroStuff.com.
Where can you get Doctor Who stuff?
SuperheroStuff.com.
Where can you get Daredevil stuff?
SuperheroStuff.com.
New items being added all the time. Get your superhero stuff at superherostuff.com. Plus, the Hero Box is back. $70 worth of superhero stuff for only $49. Superherostuff.com. where heroes shop.
Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is back, and so is our discussion of each and every episode as we gather down in the super-secret underground bunker at World Headquarters. Join us for recaps, analysis, and discussion, with a few digressions along the way, and you do have security clearance to listen. Level 117 every week, part of Sci-Fi for Me Radio, only on scififorme.com, your portal to the science fiction multiverse.
Atomic Cotton, where Erica and Zach combine their passion for art and film to create wearable art. All original, made with a love for the genre. Coming to a convention near you very soon. Or find them on the web at atomiccotton.com. Atomic Cotton. Shirts and art for fans by fans.
You want a multiverse? We've got them all. Get the latest news at scififorme.com.
Back on H2O, Jason Hutt here along with Timothy Harvey.
Hello.
And we're talking about meh TV. Just meh.
Yeah.
Our mascot for the evening. No.
Grumpy Cat?
Yeah, Grumpy Cat. All right.
No. I've got to draw the line.
No, we can't have Grumpy Cat as a mascot. No, it's my personal mascot.
I was going to say, I think we have to pay a licensing fee.
Well, that's true. Grumpy Cat. That's true.
There's an industry there.
Probably not as much as you got to pay the guy for Let's Get Ready to Rumble.
Oh, no,
good
no.
Night. Did I ever tell you that story?
Uh-uh.
Okay. The movie that I made, the romantic comedy I made, right. Apology Dance, which is actually out available for rental. Mm-hmm. I'll just put the plug in. So I'm making the Apology Dance. I shoot all of these scenes. I'm in post-production. And it comes up in conversation. We should probably check because we have a scene where our protagonist's boss actually says that line, mm-hmm. and says it in the same way, you know, let's get ready to rumble and that thing, right? And so one of our producers, he says, have we checked on that? Is that, can we use that?
Mm-hmm.
So we get I actually called the guy. I called Michael, what's his name? And said, here's what we got. Here's the movie. Here's our budget. $10,000.
Oh, yeah.
Is what he wanted for that line.
Yeah.
In one scene. In a movie with a budget that probably wasn't even that much.
Right. I mean,
I'm like, yeah, we'll cut that.
Yeah.
And that's
the line went away.
First thing that gets cut.
Yep.
Yeah. So, yeah. It's.
But, hey, you can use Happy Birthday now.
That's true.
Yep.
That's true. Marvel.
Mm-hmm.
And we've talked about some of the shows that are on now. You've got rumors of Moon Knight being in development.
Yeah.
You've got two new ones, Legion and Hellfire.
Coming in from Fox.
From Fox, because I think Hellfire is going to be on Fox, and Legion's going to be on FX. Hellfire Club.
Yeah, set in the 60s.
Yeah.
Which would be very interesting.
Which kind of makes me wonder, because the rumor is, and we can talk about this, I think we'll talk about this over on Level 117 a little bit this next week. But the rumor, which has already been denied by both Fox and Marvel, but the rumor is that in exchange for the TV rights for the X-Men,
right,
Marvel got the Fantastic Four back. I'll believe it when I see it.
Yeah.
But a lot of hopeful buzz about the internet with that regard, you know, saying, oh, they got him back. No, they didn't. That's the official updates. Well, and let me qualify that a little bit, because Den of Geek was the first to break the story. They said they had a source telling them that there was a deal where Fox got the TV rights for X-Men and Hellfire Club and all of this group in exchange for the Fantastic Four movie rights back.
Right.
They did it. So, of course, all of the other websites around ran with the story and said, hey, Den of Geek is saying this is a rumor. Everybody qualified it as a rumor, rightly so.
Mm-hmm.
And then the updates started rolling back where people are saying, nope, somebody from Fox got in touch with us. Somebody from Marvel got in touch with us. Not the case.
Right.
There's not a deal. But How long were we hearing that particular denial about Spider-Man?
Right.
And there's 3 dates in 2020 that don't have titles yet.
Right. Which is...
Yeah. People are looking at it going, that would be the time to do it.
Well, and maybe I think...
And if they're putting the Hellfire Club in the 60s, you could put the Fantastic Four, start them out in the 60s like you're talking about.
Yeah, I really think that would be the best thing to do for the Fantastic Four.
And have a little bit of a... I mean, you couldn't do a crossover if the rights reverted, but, you know, you could still set Fantastic Four in the 60s to begin with and then bring them forward like you were talking about.
Or if you wanted to do, or if you really wanted to tie it into the larger Marvel universe in a way that would that has a good place to connect with, you could definitely do it with, set it in the 80s and have it be, then you've got your Ant-Man, first Ant-Man, right. First Wasp crossover.
Right.
So, and the 80s would probably work as well because it's far enough back now that you could still do the same kind of.
Isn't that sad?
Well, you know, okay, it is and it isn't, because this happens with comic books all the time. They're always updating the origin story and moving it further and further forward,
right.
Because, I mean, the X-Men, and that was the 60s when it rolled out. Right. Fantastic Four rolled out in the 60s.
63, 61. 61.
And of course, they've been updated since. I mean, because if you think about it, it's like, well, wait a minute. Let's see. Scott Summers is...
Yeah, really.
No, he's in his 60s.
Well, the X-Men's 50 years old.
Yeah.
They're probably the
first class of the original X-Men, your Cyclops, Iceman, Marvel Girl, Beast, and Angel are all roughly 68 years old. If you all assume that they are 18 when the comic starts.
Yeah.
So they're doing pretty well, actually. They're holding up all right. They're aging much more gracefully than we are.
Okay.
But Ian McKellen will still take them all because he's...
But, you know, he's got to get his helmet back from Diggle first.
But you know what? I think we need... Yeah, no kidding. I want a John Hurt, Ian McKellen movie.
Oh, that would be fun. That would be almost like watching De Niro and Pacino together.
Exactly. Give me an entire movie of the cafe scene from Heat with McKellen and Hurt.
No. War Doctor and the Master.
Okay, so McKellen as the Master would just be, or honestly, Eve, as much as I think Ian McKellen would just absolutely rock the part. Oh, for heaven's sakes, I just drew a complete blank. Who played him? Who regenerated into John Sim? Classic British actor. Derek Jacobi.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely Derek Jacobi. That would be. See, I could handle Derek Jacobi and John Hurt just talking to each other.
Mm-hmm.
It'd be akin to the strength of. The Dr. Davros conversation that we had for the season two-parter, the opening season two-parter. Because that kind of level of just comfort in a way with each other, in a disturbing way. You know, you keep your enemies, your friends close and your enemies closer.
Well, then maybe McKellen plays wrestling.
Oh, I don't know. See, it would be so tempting to have McKellen because we never.
Or he could come back as the Valiant.
Oh, see, but see, they'd be like, McKellen is the Valiant. I don't know if you. Is there any way that you could win? I mean, you'd be like, all right, I give in because it's Gandalf and Magneto and the Valiant. I'm screwed. It's over. Forget it.
You shall not pass.
It's like, give me McKellen and Capaldi playing off each other and give us more than just the voice that McKellen did for the Snowman, the Christmas special, Matt Smith Christmas special. Because it was certainly fun to listen to him talk, but it would just... The fact that we have had such a great series of guest stars over on Doctor Who, it would be great to have McKellen there.
And Doctor Who really was the exception to the rule when you're talking about shows coming back this,
oh, yeah,
this season.
Well, yeah, and what's interesting...
See what I did there.
Yeah, I see that. But what's interesting is that they changed the format this year. Because, and I mentioned this in my first review, I think it was my first review for the season, that I kind of don't like, and I've never really liked, the 44-minute, 45-minute format that since the show came back.
Right.
Because I am an old school fan. So I remember it was a Santarin episode, and it was a two-parter. And this is a, might have been a Baker. I think it was a Tom Baker episode. And it was kind of like, felt like filler. Because it was like two episodes. What could happen in two episodes? That's only like 45 minutes long. And I remember feeling a little, you know, it was
a little cheated there.
Kinda, yeah, because you're looking at four episodes, six episodes, eight episode arcs in some cases. Yeah. There was a, I want to say it was a First Doctor. The entire season was one story.
Yeah, I think it was.
Yeah, so it's, was it The Chase? I think it might have been The Chase.
When was The Aztecs? Was Aztecs second season?
I think it was second season.
Or second series.
So, yeah. No. But it came back really, really strong because they decided to do something different. They decided they're going to, majority of the episodes this season are going to be two-parters, not everyone. There's two episodes that are essentially single episodes, but at the same time, there seems to be, there's an overarching.
Complement each other or something.
They gave themselves time to tell a story. And, because Doctor Who doesn't quite function in the same way as, say, Arrow or The Flash. I mean, they're episodic, but there's a larger through line, and, right, and Doctor Who has not always had that. That was something that actually came about in the Matt Smith years, was a lot more of the through line story. We got some of that with Bad Wolf in the Tennant years, but for the most part, it was, you know, there was a lot more of that.
Yeah, but the Bad Wolf stuff was mostly just in the background for a long time.
Right.
It wasn't even part of an arc.
Right.
Until it was.
Yeah, exactly. So the last couple seasons of Smith's run, and definitely in Capaldi's run, there were through lines. Mm-hmm. And it looks like this season there's going to be a definite through line, and it's probably going to be the death of Clara Oswald.
Spoilers.
Yeah, well,
for those of you who haven't been paying attention to the news,
And I mean, because there's certainly there are ways where she doesn't have to die, but that's where they're pointing us.
Even if she does die, she's not the only Clara Oswald,
right? And I think there could be some really interesting and kind of disturbing things if she showed up again as one of her echoes. And I mean, I think there's real places for kind of heartbreak right there. And
especially if you get one of the echoes that doesn't know who he is.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, and that would be, most of them wouldn't necessarily recognize the 12th Doctor. Because,
well, you know what? Now that I think about it, maybe not any of them would.
No. So I mean, there's things you could do and bring back the character in interesting ways if you really wanted to do it. But it did start off really strong. And
I like Victorian Clara more than any,
everybody
rest
does.
Of them.
Everybody does. Yeah. She was actually the one who really connected with audiences in a way that the modern day Clara, for some reason, didn't quite. And I think it's because the writers didn't know quite what to do with her once they got past the Impossible Girl arc.
Yeah.
This season, they figured out what to do with her. And what they're apparently doing with her is, you know.
setting her up to die. they're making her more reckless. They're making her more.
They are and my Doctor Who review, which is delayed this week, but it'll be out tomorrow as well. One of the things I touch on, spoilers for a review you haven't read yet, for an episode that's aired.
You can find that over at sci-fi4me.com.
That's right. Is that especially in this last two-parter? Toby Whitehouse wrote it.
Mm-hmm.
And he wrote The God Complex and A Town Called Mercy and School Reunion, where Sarah Jane Smith came back. And one of the things that he does really well, and I don't think it necessarily – he's kind of a divisive writer for Doctor Who fans. And I think the reason is because he has an interest in peeling back the layers of the relationships between the characters. So the discussion, there's some really interesting discussions that happen in School Reunion, for example, mm-hmm. where Sarah Jane points out the fact that the Doctor basically abandoned her.
Yeah.
You know, and that
and she, not in the right place either.
Right. Well, and she also that, you know, and the discussion with Rose about loving him and the different kinds of love we're actually seeing between the two, because, you know, there was a different relationship between the two of them. And then you get to, say, God Complex, where the Doctor basically admits he kind of likes being hero worshipped.
Yeah.
And that he's aware that his relationship with that Amy's, you know, infatuation with him is dangerous. And Rory does what you were kind of watching him do grow into through the course of his entire time in the TARDIS. He looks at the Doctor and says, "You're dangerous. You're a menace. You're going to get us killed."
Yeah.
And that was something that you know, made perfect sense in context of the characters. But it was something we hadn't seen before. And if you look back to the history of Doctor Who, it's there. The Doctor changes his companions. They have to change. They're traveling through time and space and with a Time Lord. It's how are they going to stay the same? And it got a lot of it depended on the kind of storytelling that was happening in the world, because storytelling structure of the 60s is different from the 70s, is different from the 80s and the 90s and now. And you get something in Before the Flood, where you actually have, and we saw this before last season as well with Capaldi, really pointing out that the Doctor, the reason he was asking, is he a good man, is because he's very aware that he's often not a nice man.
Right.
And he does, and he's not nice because he looks at the bigger picture, and sometimes the bigger picture means people die.
And we get that with Mummy on a Train.
Exactly.
Where he's sitting there going, you know, if I hadn't figured it out, the next one would have died, and I'd still be trying to figure it out, and the next one would die, mm-hmm. and however long it takes to figure it out.
And the reality is again, that you go back and look at the show since the beginning, and it's always been that way.
Yeah.
But so often you don't get a chance, the characters, to talk about it. So there's a very strong character moment in Before the Flood where Clara makes it. It's one of the finest pieces that I think Jen has had the chance to chew on, which is that she admits that she has let the Doctor replace everything in her life, and she is broken. She basically admits that you know, he can die with the next one. He can die with the companion after her.
Mm-hmm.
Because she says he's made himself indispensable to her. And it's so clear that she's not over Danny's death. She's not over anything. She right. is, and another piece that's setting up for the fall. But it also, it something that we've seen with the show that we hadn't seen before is the real effect on traveling and on living this kind of life. And you saw it with Amy and Rory, and you see it with Clara even more so. And when you have a two-parter, you can delve into character stuff like that, as opposed to the pretty episodic nature of most of Doctor Who's history, aside from this, you know, the old school stuff where it was 2, 4, 6 episodes long.
Right.
But even then, you didn't necessarily get through lines beyond those arcs where you see over on Arrow or Flash, you might spend an entire season building up, you know, the relationship between Harrison Wells and Barry Allen. And so that you can yank it out and you know, just the horror of it all that
Wait,
he can be.
He's who?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So, but you could, that hasn't been necessarily the structure over on Doctor Who for the most part in the course of the show.
Yeah.
The show's run. So when you have this kind of thing where you're getting more of a through line through the episodes and the two-parters to tell more depth of the story, it does come back stronger.
Well, and another one that kind of does that with the arcs is Star Wars Rebels.
Yeah.
Because that one's just come back this week. And we got the one-hour piece, Siege on Lothal, mm-hmm. in the summer, which, to me, was a much stronger episode than The Lost Commanders, which was the season episode, the season opener for mm-hmm. season two, where they found, you know, they find Rex and, you know, reunite and that kind of thing. It's a part one,
right?
Of, I don't know if it's going to be a two part or three part. So they're going to be playing with arcs a little bit more, I think, in Rebels this second season. And then you've got the overarching, you know, the broader scope story of Darth, you know, Darth Vader and Ahsoka, because now Darth Vader says, you know, Skywalker's apprentice is still alive,
mm-hmm.
and the Emperor's like, ooh, that's good. She can lead us to the other Jedi, you know. And Sam Witwer, I got to give props to Sam Witwer because he's doing the voice of the Emperor.
Oh, that's right.
And he sounds just like Ian McDiarmid.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm sitting there and I'm hearing it. I'm thinking, that's McDiarmid. But it's not. But it sounds exactly like him. I mean, you've got, and of course, it helps that James Earl Jones is actually doing the voice of Darth Vader.
Well, I mean,
so that
okay.
sets that up.
You
but,
have to have James Earl Jones do yeah, the voice but, of Darth Vader.
But, you know, you hear Sam Witwer do the voice of the Emperor, and you can swear it's Ian McDiarmid.
Yeah.
But it's not. But the episode coming back into the season, it was okay. I mean, it was a decent balance between the stuff for the kids and the stuff for the grown-ups.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Star Wars stuff as opposed to the fun Star Wars stuff, you know?
Yeah.
But it wasn't as strong of an episode as Siege on Lothal. And I don't know what it is. It just feels like maybe the season overall, with everything, people, maybe, I don't know if they're necessarily playing it safe, but they're, rationing?
It could be.
Maybe?
It doesn't.
We gotta parcel it out. We've gotta make sure that every piece is there. All the way through, we've got this many episodes. I don't know. It's a general feeling that I've got I can't really articulate very well.
It does occur to me that in some respects they are trusting their audience. Because they're trusting that the folks who were there the last season are whatever on all of these shows, they're trusting that all the folks who were there from the last season are going to be okay with coming back to whatever this is.
And the second episodes of the season
have all been stronger.
Yeah, much better. Much stronger.
Well, okay, we haven't had the Walking Dead second season episode yet, but it's still, even so. Yeah, it's, I don't know. I've been looking at some of the other shows on TV that aren't necessarily genre. I've been kind of watching Blindspot.
Mm-hmm.
Which we were curious if when it first right. came on, we were curious if it was going to have genre
yeah,
elements.
It's Greg Berlanti,
and it's not. It's becoming to feel a little more standard procedural with wrinkles.
And it's an amnesia mystery.
It's an amnesia mystery thing, and it's also got they just did a really dumb thing in the last episode, and I was just kind of like, though you just. Pulled out the dumb writing handbook. Congratulations, folks. You have found the dumb writing section of the dumb writing handbook, and you're now you decided to copy that straight out. Oh, wow.
There's a sitcom in that.
There is.
The Dumb Writers Guild.
There, you know what? Yes. And I got a list of shows that they can use them on that.
It'll be an acronym, TROPES.
Yes. I like right? it. Right? I like it. So yeah, which is
let's get on that.
Oh yeah, well, and I completely get the procedurals are popular. Mm-hmm. Okay, I like a good procedural too. Let's see, Sleepy Hollow is a procedural.
Yeah, and it's about to cross over with another procedural when they do their crossover with Bones.
Are they really?
Yeah, they're going to cross over with Bones this season.
I missed that little piece of news, which is going to be.
Don't know how they're going to do it.
Well, wait a minute. There's some problems with that. Anyway, okay.
Well, that's like crossing over Warehouse 13 with Alphas. With Lindsay Wagner's character.
I know.
Because it was such a disconnect.
Oh yeah, because the two shows have such a different flavor.
Yeah.
I'm not saying you can't have them exist in the same world, but having them exist in the same world made no sense whatsoever.
Right. And I think Sleepy Hollow and Bones is going to be that same kind of thing.
Yeah, I think that's a... are we in Bones last season? Is that what's happening here?
I think so. Yeah, but they're on the same night now.
Oh, okay.
So, I mean, it's like Magnum P.I. and Murder, She Wrote.
Yeah, but see, that was different. That was a different time.
But it's all the CBS shows cross over that one.
Because
Magnum P.I. crossed with Murder, She Wrote one time, and it crossed with Simon and Simon one time.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's... Well, but again, we come back to it, and we talked about this before. Storytelling was different then.
Yeah.
You had this sort of, I mean, there was, oddly enough, a sameness to the worlds these shows inhabited that you could do that a lot easier than I think you can do now.
Right.
But, so Sleepy Hollow is a procedural, Minority Report is a procedural.
Yeah. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is kind of...
It's
got some elements of procedural.
It has some elements.
Gotham.
Well, I wouldn't even say Gotham's a procedural. At least...
Gotham's a procedural when it's not trying to be a supervillain show.
Okay. Lucifer is going to be a procedural. Yeah. But Lucifer is also going to be the kind of procedural that you sit there and go, you guys decided that you didn't want to make a procedural. But you're making a procedural, but you don't really want to. You want to make something else and it's got a procedural framework. But you're going to sit there and go... Whatever.
Well, Grimm.
Grimm's
kind of it's got elements of a procedural. Sure. I mean, a lot of weeks they ignore the police work to a great extent.
They are terrible policemen over on Grimm.
Oh, yeah.
That is the worst police department, not ever, but it's there. Yeah. This is not good police work, folks. But at the same time, you know, I get it. And there's a certain comfort. And look, the procedural idea is a good structure. It's just that there's so many of them.
Yeah.
And talk about too much TV, maybe, is the fact that, you know, and the best of the procedurals isn't even on the air anymore. The original Law and Order.
Right.
That's too bad. I want to see some of the Law & Order characters cross over into some of these shows. I would love to see Sam Waterston show up and
on Flash.
Yeah, that'd be fantastic. Yeah.
But, well, it's because Jesse Martin was on Law & Order.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Well, you know what? We have Blacklist is a pseudo procedural spy show,
right.
Morality play. Which a lot of good procedurals should be morality plays. That's kind of procedurals grew out of the Western, really.
Yeah.
If you think about it. There's some great genre actors who show up over on that show, even though Blacklist is not a genre show. And of course, it's got James Spader. So
people asked John Wesley Shipp if he was going to be in a suit this year.
Yeah.
He says, probably not. But he tells the story, because we know Mark Hamill's coming back as Trickster this season. Mm-hmm. He tells the story that when they were done shooting the last episode of the 91 show, John Wesley Shipp ripped the mask off.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, just shredded, just ripped it off. And the earpieces, the mm-hmm. little lightning bolt earpieces, Mark Hamill nicked them. And took them and still has them.
Oh, yeah.
And apparently there was a conversation about it when he came back to the show this past year. And Hamill confirmed, you know, he had a conversation with Shipp. And he says, yeah, I still got them. This is so funny.
Well, it was, as I recall, that costume was really uncomfortable.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I recall him talking about that.
That goes back to your storytelling process back then. You know, mm-hmm. how else are you going to do it? You know,
right.
The costume design process nowadays is a lot different.
Oh yeah, they kind of felt you need to have them. You need to have the costumes look like superhero costumes in a comic booky way,
right? And they took their cue from Batman.
Yeah,
you know, from Tim Burton's Batman. You had the molded,
mm-hmm.
sculpted suit that was made out of something.
Yeah. Whereas now you look at you look at somebody like the Flash, and you know they've come up with an in show explanation as mm-hmm. to why. It is what it is.
And it actually works.
And it actually works. And it also, they're less concerned about making him look like a muscle-bound character as they are making him look. Right. I mean, if you have a lean actor who looks kind of like he could be a runner anyway,
mm-hmm. You don't want to beef him up with padding on the costume.
Yeah, and you don't want to have, and you don't, just because in the comic book world, everyone wears skin-tight clothing. Doesn't mean that when it comes to the practical costuming, you know, I mean, the first Bryan Singer X-Men film
mm-hmm.
really kind of broke the mold for superhero costumes and really kicked open the door for folks to sit there and go, oh,
yeah,
we can do that. Okay, that's cool. And I think I wasn't overly thrilled when it translated over into the comic books themselves. In some cases it worked fine, but in some cases it also reminded me of sort of that 90s padding
mm-hmm.
shoulder thing.
Yeah, the shoulder pads. Shoulder
pads and pouches.
Yeah.
So it was a dark time. The 90s were a dark comic book time, folks. I'm telling you. You think everyone's complaining about the DC universe being dark now. It was dark everywhere in the 90s. I mean,
yeah.
Nobody made it out of the 90s intact. Comic book companies went out of business by the handful in the 90s.
Well, and that's that, you know, in the 90s is when Marvel sold all the rights away to everything.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, well, and one day we should just go through the 90s year by year and talk about how awful a lot of the movies were. There was some great stuff in the 90s. So don't misunderstand. Most of it wasn't superhero films, but there were so many just bad movies in general.
Mm-hmm.
For all the great films that came out in the 90s.
Every now and again,
so much bad.
I'm flipping channels and I run across pop-up video.
Oh yeah.
On VH1 in repeats.
Mhm.
You know. And I'll sit there and I'll watch it.
Can't make any new pop-up video stuff cuz
nobody's going to watch it. But yeah, yeah. I'm sitting there going, "Yeah, I remember this. I remember that."
Mm-hmm.
I remember that, and it makes me feel so old.
See, I don't mind. I don't. Some of the stuff we were kind of having this conversation today, at my day job, we were talking about music, and one of my doctors is got a great taste in music. Every time I walk into his office, he's playing something that's. He goes, "I don't like rap." I'm, okay, that's fine. Back I'm walking, I got class, you know, he's playing something classical, coming the next time he's in some blues, some jazz.
Right.
Listening to, there was a reviewer on the radio talking about they re-released some old gospel music. That's, I mean, because gospel never has had good sales numbers.
Right.
So when the CD explosion happened, so much of the stuff that came out in the 50s and 60s for gospel never got put out on CD. And it's just sitting in vaults.
Mm.
And it has never been re-released.
Oh, wow.
And so there's a new, I can't remember the name of the band. It was a men's group. I think it was might have been a quartet. And they put out they sang at a Selma, way back when. And so for the 50th anniversary of Selma, they re-released this CD,
yeah.
Or they re-released this thing. And music's great. I mean, if you're a fan of rock and roll, then you should go listen to the blues, go listen to gospel, go listen to early country.
Because that's where rock and roll came from.
These are all major influences on rock and roll. And whether or not you like gospel music, you know, gospel is, you know, if you're religious or not, gospel's got some great sound, some amazing voices, and they do some great stuff. So it's certainly, if you're a music fan, you want to know where things came from, I highly recommend checking this stuff out. But there's huge numbers of gospel acts that you just can't find them anymore, mm-hmm. because they're nobody has re-released him in 20, 30, 40 years.
Right.
So it was really, really kind of interesting to hear this on the radio. I was like, ooh, that's really good. But, you know, it's things go in and out of fashion. And like I said, there were never the sales numbers for right. that sort of stuff. So,
well, it's like anything else, it cycles.
Oh, sure. But ultimately, all these folks are, you know, it's just like, you know, when will the bubble burst for superhero films? When they stop making money. Music is a much more fickle beast because, especially now, because you don't have to pay for it anymore, pretty much.
Unless you're listening to Taylor Swift.
Well, yeah, but you know, but honestly, go to YouTube,
yeah,
and you can listen to her music for free, right?
For free.
So it doesn't bother me so much that this stuff is the 80s and 90s music. Because sure. Does it remind me how old I am? Of course it does. But at the same time, that was the music we were growing up on. So there's always going to be a fondness for a lot of that stuff for me, just because it's like, oh yeah. Because you know what? I can tell you exactly where I was when I heard, say, Pet Shop Boys, West End Girls.
I don't remember where I was.
I can tell you exactly where I was. It was a Sunday morning. I was in my old room at my parents' old house, not the one they live in now. Mm-hmm. And I still had a bunk bed because at one point I had shared a room with my little brother, and we had separate rooms, but I had the bunk beds. It was Sunday morning. We were getting ready for church.
Yep.
And there was a brand new radio station. Or, I'm sorry, it was a radio station that had brand new music. It was stuff that had not made it out yet. This was like, you know, I can't even remember who the host was. It was a national host. It wasn't Casey Kasem. It was
Rick Dees?
It might have been Rick Dees. But it
or,
was
or oh, what was his other Shadow Stevens?
Yeah, it might have been Shadow Stevens. I bet it was Shadow Stevens. Yep. But it was stuff that had not gotten out yet. I mean, it was like it wasn't exactly premiering, but it might as well been premiering. So a lot of British stuff would make it onto this show. Mm-hmm. And I was sitting there going, what is this music? I'd never heard it before. And it was that whole British, that whole 80s British kind of thing that came in.
Yeah.
It wasn't the British invasion as much as the British. It's like, oh, yeah, that whole explosion of alternative pop in the 80s.
Mm-hmm. Duran Duran.
They were a big part of that. And so it's kind of like, what is this? I mean, you know, it's the risk of going, you know, a little too cheesy. It's the soundtrack of your life, right? Yeah. Well, there's not going to be much now that's going to inspire me the same way.
No. Motley Crue.
It's not classic rock, but they are retiring.
They
are retiring.
Speaking of retiring, we are going to do that this week. Speaking of listening for free,
yes,
you can do that all the time with our shows. You can find several different podcasts over under the tab, the Sci-Fi for Me radio tab on our main site, which is scififorme.com, or you can find us all on iTunes. I finally heard back from them.
Oh, yeah?
There's no way that we're going to figure out how many people listen to us by iTunes, because iTunes doesn't release that data to anybody, except if you sell things through iTunes, you can get that.
And we don't sell things. We give it away.
Well, with podcasts, you can't sell. They don't have it set up to allow for podcasts to be sold.
Right.
So we don't have any way of knowing how many people listen to our show.
All of them. All the people. Everywhere.
Well, and last
worldwide.
Week...
Worldwide.
And last week, we did ask for you out there in our audience to give us some feedback.
Yeah.
H20@scififorme.com. Or leave us a comment, or you can call our hotline, which is 573-42-SCIFI.
Mm-hmm.
You can leave a comment on all of the social media. We're on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Pinterest, Google+, YouTube, Tumblr. And... let us know what you think of the show. Let us know if you've got an idea for a topic. If you think that we go too long or we're not long enough or what, you know, whatever thoughts that you have that you want to share with us, we haven't got a whole lot of feedback, but I know there are people that listen to the show.
Oh, yes.
Because there are numbers. So, yeah, let us know what you think, and maybe we'll do our 90s retrospective sometime this month. We're probably going to do a scary episode closer to Halloween, and we're just going to line this stuff out.
All of our episodes scary. Well, we talked about this before. When we talk about topics, we talk about this, and it's a good time to talk about the melding of science fiction and horror. Which goes back a long, long way.
Right. So we'll get to that sometime this month. In the meantime, superherostuff.com.
Good, cool, neat things over there.
They are. Hang on a second. I'll cut this part out. La, 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 la. Come on, go. Quick.
You got a sale?
Yeah. Micah. Yeah, here it is. Okay. They are having several different sales and promotions this month. The Batman shirt is back.
Oh, okay.
And they're having a costume contest.
Oh.
So you can go over to superherostuff.com. They're having a Halloween super sale, 14% off on select items. The Batman shirt is back. They're having a costume hoodie contest as well as a regular costume contest. So there's all sorts of stuff going on over there. You can check that out at superherostuff.com. And that's going to do it for us. This week, next week, we'll be back with another topic
that
we will talk to death and digress a little bit and circle back and
digress. Yeah. You've never digressed ever,
right?
All right, couldn't even try.
Thanks very much for listening, folks. We will be back next week on Sci-Fi for Me Radio. This has been H2O.
This has been a presentation of SciFiForMe.com. Copyright 2015 by Flaming Dog Media, LLC. All rights reserved. No portion of this program may be retransmitted without the express written consent of Flaming Dog Media. This is Sci-Fi for Me Radio.